For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome to the show, Mike Farrell Sports Show. My name is Adam, as always. Mike Farrell is with me, the godfather of recruiting, for another week. Thanks so much for everyone tuning in, particularly if you're on the Believe Podcast Network. Make sure you subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that button down low that says subscribe as well. That way this fine program will pop into your feed anytime Mike and I get off our lazy ass and decide to do one, Mike. And this week, we've got a good one because the week four slate, a couple of themes stuck out to me. There were some teams that kind of played some other teams close, and I think the right team won in the end. But there were some upsets that took place this week, Mike. And let's dive into maybe one of the first one. I'm not sure if anyone saw this one coming. Number six, Oklahoma at home welcomes Kansas State in. And Kansas State pulls off a 41-34 upset led by former Nebraska quarterback Adrian Martinez, Brent Venables, Jeff Lebby, Dylan Gabriel led offense, not enough to keep K-State off the victory. Mike, how surprised were you by this?
Not overly surprised. And people will say that's hindsight, you know, 2020. But I thought Kansas State was my sleeper in the 12. I didn't pick them to win the Big 12, but a sleeper meaning that they could give some teams some problems. And, you know, coming off their route of Missouri, they really let down, obviously, lost to Tulane in what I felt was just a absolute, you know, free money situation. Tulane was getting 14. Kansas State was going to overlook them. They had Oklahoma next, blah, blah, blah. They end up losing to Tulane and then coming out and playing. I expected them to play against Oklahoma. I figured this would be a close game. Kansas State gives Oklahoma problems. You know, it's a very effective offense when it's rolling. You know, Martinez is running and throwing, and Deuce Vaughn is a threat, and sometimes you use him as a decoy, sometimes as a, you know, they don't really use him as a receiver that much these days, but I wasn't shocked. So people, you know, look at Oklahoma and they're like, this is a team that's made the playoffs, but Lincoln Riley, we're happy he's gone, blah, blah, blah. It's not an easy job to get to the playoff three times in 5 years, and it's not an easy job to fix defensive woes in 1 year. Venables is a defensive coach, but he's personnel that he's working with, and they just aren't that good. So they gave up a ton of points. They made Adrian Martinez look like Tom Brady. Wasn't a stunner to me. It was really surprising they didn't adjust to the running game of Martinez. But, you know, 21 carries, 148 yards. By far the leading rusher in the entire game. That surprised me a bit, but not that Kansas State won. Kansas State's a really good football team that's going to give a lot of teams some trouble down the line.
Were you surprised by the Oklahoma offense? This is obviously a team that you know could put up points, that they couldn't hang with K-State as much as I guess I'll get your impression on Dylan Gabriel. Obviously, I cover UCF, as many of you know, so I have my thoughts on Dylan Gabriel and sort of how he's played in big games. What did you make of Dylan Gabriel's performance?
I mean, nothing wrong with what he did. Four touchdowns, no interceptions, you know, completion rate near 80, 330 yards. You know, I think it was a situation where they established what they wanted to establish, which is get the ball to Marvin Mims, let him get the ball in space, let him create, you know, use some of their bigger receivers like Theo Weiss and Farouk, you know, get Eric Gray going, running the football. I think overall, it really wasn't an issue with Oklahoma's offense. We expect them to score 50 points. We expect them to outscore everybody in a, you know, sort of a shootout type of game. 34 points should win the football game. Just should. Dylan Gabriel's performance should win the football game. Now, you as a UCF guy, what did you see? Because I don't see how he could be any sort of factor in the blame here.
Yeah, third down, he had an easy throw to Stoops, right? That would have moved the chains and overthrows him. Basically, it's not a connection. They got to go off the field. They punt. K-State gets the ball back. They go down and score. I think that's the challenge with Dylan Gabriel, in my experience, is you'll see him make these big plays. You'll see these eye-catching boss scores. But there's always a moment or two in the game where he needs to do one thing specifically, make one play, make one throw, make one read. And time and time again, if you look at his history at UCF, he came up with a big short, particularly in big games. So I wasn't surprised to see him, you know, flub that third down past the Stoops, which would have kept the clock moving, would have kept the chains moving, would have potentially allowed them to even the score up. He seems to just have that one moment every game. And maybe it's nitpicking, Mike. Maybe I'm finding the one pass out of, he threw 39, he completed 26, right? You know, I'm finding one pass out of that. But that's just been a bit of a trajectory with him, is when the big play is needed. And I don't mean big play by over the top 50-yard touchdown. I mean big play like third and six, we need seven. That's typically where he hasn't necessarily always stepped up to the bill.
Yeah, and you know, third down efficiency wasn't great, you know, despite his statistics. As you mentioned, 26 to 39, 330 yards, four touchdowns, no interceptions, really efficient football game. 4 of 13 on third down. That's a little bit to be desired. Kansas State was 8 of 17, you know, completely different scenario there. They kept on the field. They stayed on the field, gave their defense a chance to rest. They kept drives alive. Penalties, man. I mean, penalties really killed them. 11 penalties, nearly 100 yards worth of them. Just a sloppy game from that perspective. There were no fumbles. There were no interceptions. There was really, as you mentioned, you know, that underthrow was key at the end of the game. But when you look at, as far as a clean football game, you know, Gabriel played a clean game. They did what they wanted to do from the game plan perspective. Penalties kind of knocked them back. And Kansas State just looked like the better football team. Adrian Martinez, that's how he was supposed to play at Nebraska. And if you remember correctly, he can give difficult teams a lot of problems. You know, he sort of plays up a little bit to his competition. So it didn't shock me. You know, we've got an interesting Big 12, Texas lost to Texas Tech, and we don't have to spend a ton of time on that simply because that's certainly not a surprise. I mean, Texas is disappointing us for a very long time, 1-10-win season since 2009, and just on and on with finding ways to lose football games, and this one come back late and then lose it again. It's just Texas is being Texas. Oklahoma, I knew they would probably take a little step back. I still think they're a good football team. I still think they have a chance to win the Big 12. But when you look at the Big 12, man, it's hard to say the Big 12 is loaded, which because it just doesn't seem right to say that. But it's kind of loaded. I mean, Kansas State's a tough team. Baylor's obviously a very good football team. Oklahoma State just keeps winning football games under Gundy, and no one pays attention. You know, you look at the efficiency of Kansas and how good they've been now under Lance Leopold. Texas Tech, kind of scary a little bit. You know, they hung in with NC State and beating Texas. And then, of course, you know, Iowa State doesn't really get talked about a lot. Matt Campbell, they lost to Baylor. It was a close game. He's a good coach, and they're a difficult team. So just a lot of parity in that conference, and Oklahoma's going to really have to scratch to win it. And I expected that with Riley leaving.
Who does win it? You mentioned the breakup, the Kansas Jayhawks. I mean, they trounced Duke. Not sure if that's really something you put a headline on. But who wins this Big 12?
I'm gravitating towards Oklahoma State. You know, I mean, we saw some weaknesses of Baylor against BYU, and we saw some BYU weaknesses against Oregon. You know, Kansas, I love the story. You know, I love the fact that they're, you know, winning games and obviously scoring a lot of points. But I don't know if we can keep count on, you know, scoring 35 plus a game. And they've got a little bit of a rough stretch after Iowa State and TCU where they play Oklahoma, Baylor, Oklahoma State. And then they finish with Texas and Kansas State. So I can't see Kansas winning it. Baylor, maybe. Oklahoma, maybe. But right now I'm leaning towards the fighting Mike Gundy's. They just they play efficiently. I know they looked horrible against Central Michigan early in the season, but they play efficiently. He's a good coach. His team's always prepared. And they are just quietly one of those teams that could easily run off a 12-0 season and no one will pay attention.
All right, we got one more upset in the top 25. We'll get back to that in a second. Let's get to the closer games, Mike, the interesting games. Number five, Clemson. Wake Forest gives them all they can handle. They stretch that thing to OT, but DJU comes out on the right side. Five touchdown passes, Mike. Clemson wins 51-45 in a shootout with Wake Forest. This was an interesting back and forth game. I mean, obviously DJU played really well. Wake Forest with some really questionable play calling, in my opinion, down the stretch there when they could have potentially gone down the field. They ran, five, six straight plays in a row. Clemson stuffs them, puts that thing into overtime and comes out with the win. What were your takeaways? Did Clemson win? Did Wake Forest lose? Is Clemson good? Are they back? What's going on with Clemson?
I Wake Forest, I don't know. I love Clawson as a coach. I think he's very, very good and done a tremendous job with that program, given their unbelievable limitations compared to some other programs in the conference. I think they gave this one away a little bit. I see people saying we all owe an apology to DJ Uiagalelei. No, we don't. 371 yards at five TDs. That's great. But it's one game. And this is who we expected to see when he was doing the Dr. Pepper commercials and after those 2 years in COVID. Maybe this is going to be the thing that gets him over the top. But what I was really honestly concerned about, if I'm Clemson, is the defense. They just did not look good, especially on the back end. Sam Hartman throws for six touchdowns, 20 of 29, 337 yards. Just carved them apart. And that's not a good sign. I really thought Clemson's defense would be a little bit better than this. The pressure was there from the interior. Tyler Davis had a sack and a half, and Brian Brzee is always disrupting plays. Miles Murphy from the edge. Their front is fine. The linebackers surprised me a little bit. Trenton Simpson is a very good football player. Barrett Carter is very athletic. They made plays, but they also missed tackles. And then the back end just looked awful. And that's a big concern for me. So I think what we learned in this game is Clemson's not as strong as we expected them to be. And that the struggles that they had early in the season, they killed Georgia Tech, but it wasn't a great performance. Furman and Louisiana Tech. I mean, Louisiana Tech, they didn't destroy. They beat pretty good. A lot of the offensive woes that we see are starting to be ironed out, but defensively, this team might be more susceptible than we thought.
NC State coming up this weekend. Then they have at Boston College, at your number 23 ranked Florida State Seminoles. Mike, while we're here, let's just talk about Florida State 4-0. They take Boston College down. It sounds like you're making a trip to Tallahassee soon to hang out with your friends there. Maybe not this week. There's going to be a hurricane, but maybe next week you should go hang out and see what's going on in Tallahassee. I think those guys love you up there.
Should probably go during the hurricane so I get swept away and die, because that's what everybody wants. Mike Norvell. Okay, so I obviously put out the tweet that said I couldn't find six wins on this schedule. They've got four in four games. When I looked at the schedule, I obviously assumed Duquesne would be a win. I assumed LSU would be a loss. I figured a split between Louisville and Boston College, and then we get into the teeth. They got Wake Forest, NC State, and Clemson coming up. So are they going to be 4-3 and everybody's going to be questioning him? Are they going to be 7-0 in the top five in the country, perhaps, after Wake Forest, NC State, Clemson? That's what we're on the precipice of finding out here. And it's funny because it really comes down to one blocked extra point. I believe this team believed in itself after the LSU game. Had that point not been blocked, had this gone to overtime, had LSU somehow won that football game, Florida State would have been kicking themselves for, obviously a pitch play on the 1 yard line, which led to a fumble, giving up a 99 yard drive for a touchdown to tie the game, blah, 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 on and on. There's so many, Mike Norvell isn't the right coach for us. What are we going to do? But that one blocked extra point, I think, led this Florida State team to believe they can win, build their confidence even further. The Louisville game did that as well, because everybody contributed in that win. And now Boston College wasn't even a thought. They just destroyed them. And that's kind of what we're used to seeing Florida State. Beat the the BCs and the Georgia Techs and the Syracuse and Louisville's the world handily. So where are we at with this team? They're much, much better than I thought they would be. Norvell's done one of the best coaching jobs so far in the country. I got them worst case scenario, 5-2 after this 3-game gauntlet, which is great.
Okay.
You know,
so you have them beating either Wake, NC State, or Clemson.
One of those three should be victories. And more likely, I would say, since it's, you know, at home is Wake Forest.
And NC State's on the road, Clemson at home.
Yeah, at NC State's tough, and Clemson is, of course, tough. And I just said Clemson might be a little bit overrated, but not to the level of, yeah, remember, this Clemson team was beating Florida State a couple of years ago by, I don't know, 40 points. So they kind of have their number there, so I can't really predict an upset there. But what would be nice to see, not for my timeline nor my emotional stability or state, would be a 7-0 Florida State team after Clemson. That would be just cool for college football, you know. And we're going to segue into Miami, I know. You know, when a team like Florida State is successful, when a team like Texas and USC and Miami and some of the other programs in Michigan last year and this year, it's good for college football because those are big, big fan bases. Those are rabid fans that want to have a passion about football. And they haven't had one in a very long time. And when you talk about recruiting, I mean, they just got Hakeem Williams last week, a 5-star wide receiver from Florida, that was an early trend to A&M. But because of the success they've had, they were able to keep him in state. Biggest commitment since Cam Akers for them, you know, which seems like a million years ago. Momentum is going very well in Tallahassee here. And it's all because of a blocked extra point, which is just sometimes how this works. They start to believe in themselves.
Yeah, I think that blocked extra point, but I also think Tate Rodemaker coming in and relief of an injured Jordan Travis, pulling out a win at Louisville on the road on a Friday night, probably to your point, give them just a whirlwind of confidence going into what they're working on. Obviously, Jordan Travis is back. We'll see how healthy he can remain, but I think that probably helped from a confidence standpoint. We're in the state of Florida, so let's stay in the state of Florida for a second. The Gators travel to Knoxville, take on Tennessee. Fantastic environment, Mike. Just the overhead shots of the orange and white checkerboard. That stadium was electric, and Tennessee comes out with a 38-33 victory. They were, you know, pretty much had this game in hand for a period of time. I think they tried to give it away at the end there, but they hold on. Tennessee now 4-0 under Josh Heupel. The Vols are ecstatic, the first time they've actually been ranked this high in a long time, Mike. What does this say more about the way that Tennessee is coming together, and are they a viable threat, or is Florida just still not the team that you thought they were going to be?
No, everything about this is about Tennessee. I don't think this is about Florida. You know, I mean, the atmosphere there was amazing. You know, this team plays hard. This team, you know, continues to grind on defense, on offense, you know, and there's something about this football team that you just see that you didn't see with Butch Jones. You didn't see with Jeremy Pruitt, and they had their moments, both of those coaches, but you didn't truly believe it. You know, whether it was a fluke play here and there or a fluke win here and there, you know, this was a team that owns them. That has really owned them for a very, very long time. And a team that certainly psychologically could have gotten their head and they could have stubbed their toe and lost this lead and blown this game. And they didn't do it. And I think that speaks volumes to the new head coach, what he believes in, and the leadership on this team. They seem to be playing together. Florida, a work in progress. Okay, we saw them beat Utah, and then Kentucky and USF gave them trouble, and Kentucky blew them out. And they're 2-2, but we kind of knew that. We didn't know how good Tennessee was going to be, and still we don't. Kentucky still could be the number two team in the East. You know, crossover, Ole Miss could be a better football team in the SEC. We don't know, but we do know 4-0, Rocky Top was rocking, and I do believe that Tennessee is heading in a great direction. A really, really big visit weekend for them as well. Recruiting's going well. Everything seems to be on the upswing momentum-wise. And just like I said, college football is better when teams like this are good. And a good Tennessee football team is great for college football.
I can take my word for it. When the Josh Heupel offense is rolling, it's hard to stop, Mike. But I'm like flabbergasted how well Hendon Hooker's playing. 22 of 28, 349 yards in the air, two touchdowns. Ran for another 112 and ran another touchdown. And Mike, he is playing just fantastic football right now. A guy, obviously, at Virginia Tech, who essentially becomes odd man out, goes to Heupel. Doesn't even start initially, right? Everyone forgets Joe Milton from the Michigan days ends up as Heupel starter early on. He goes to Hendon Hooker and hasn't looked back, Mike. And he's a big reason why, in my opinion, Tennessee's offense is playing so well right now.
And I think that was the one mistake Heupel made to start. You know, I mean, Joe Milton wasn't the guy, but it might have been the best thing. Because I think it pissed off Hooker. I really do. I think he's a kid who plays with a chip on his shoulder. This is going back to his high school days. People not believing in him. He was underranked out of high school, sort of had a good start at Virginia Tech and then regressed a bit. And I think that really wore on him that he wasn't, able to sort of take the next step there. And the talent around him wasn't very great and the coaching wasn't very great. Then he comes to Tennessee, loses the job to a guy that, everybody up in Michigan sort of laughed at. You can't complete a 5-yard pass without hitting somebody in the helmet. It pissed him off. And sometimes with that rage comes a little bit of recklessness, a little bit of I'm going to show you. And sometimes it comes with just laser focus. And that's what you see from Hooker. Laser focus. 8 touchdowns, no interceptions again. Last year was 31-3. He's so good protecting the football. He's physical and tough. I mean, he got knocked around. He had sacked 8 times, knocked around him, run the ball a ton. And didn't care and was in the face of every defender. This is a kid who really wants it. This is a kid who believes it. This is a kid who was disrespected. But he's not taking it to that next level where I'm going to just throw into traffic and try to make too much happen. He stayed within himself and made himself, arguably, and I'm not saying this is true, but the best quarterback in the SEC. I mean, there's a lot of good ones, but you could certainly make a case for him, over some guys, whether they're ballyhooed recruits like Bryce Young or whether they're, little sort of underdog scenarios like Stetson Bennett. Hooker can make that case as the best quarterback in the SEC.
Tennessee's got a bye this week, Mike, then at LSU, home Alabama, home UT Martin, home Kentucky, at Georgia. So we're about to find out really quick a lot about Tennessee. Again, at LSU,
Alabama game for Alabama. At Alabama game. So in the past many years, when they've gone and played Alabama, whether home or away or whatever, cross division, they've got thumped and embarrassed. And they've embarrassed themselves, whether it's the flipping off the crowd or whatever. They just looked horrible. That is a key game for them. At LSU is not fun. Lucky for them, it's not a night game. And that'll be a challenge. But that Alabama game, I think, is a real – check the pulse. For Texas, we thought it was. It didn't turn out to be check the pulse because they're just down to their competition. I think Tennessee's playing up. And I'm not saying they're going to beat Alabama, but if they stay in that game, make it close, that's going to be sort of the game that, I think springboards them into that Kentucky, Georgia, fight for the East type of, down the stretch battle.
You said the word embarrassed, Mike, and that can only bring up one game.
Yes.
The Miami Hurricanes and the Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders, 45-31. The U, decidedly not back, Mike. This was just a bit embarrassing. Tyler Van Dyke has just regressed. I'm not sure if it's play calling, not sure it's mechanics. He goes 16 of 32, 2 picks. QBR was 22. Miami just couldn't get out of its own way. It seemed like, Middle Tennessee could get whatever they wanted. I mean, it seems like they were throwing 80-yard bombs from their 2-yard line. They had all day to do whatever they wanted, Mike. There's close games, and there's, they squeak one out. This was a beatdown. I mean, this was a legitimate win from start to finish.
Absolute embarrassment. You go down 10-0, you're down 17-3 after – the first quarter, you're down 24-3 at one point. It's 24-10 and a half. Never got close. 31-17, maybe there's a sniff of hope. And then, 98-yard touchdown pass how does that happen? These things are inexcusable. It's embarrassing. And it's damning. And, You know, I get the fans' outrage. You know, Josh Gattis comes in from Michigan, and he's got more of a pro-style, conservative, balanced offense, and that's not what Tyler Van Dyke does. It's not his strength. So Tyler Van Dyke goes from, oh, we're going to see this potential first-round quarterback. They don't play Texas A&M, and he looked like garbage in that game. And then he gets benched against Middle Tennessee, and Jake Garcia is the guy. I don't know, you know, what Cristobal is going to do. I assume he's going to go back to Van Dyke, but you want to talk about everything going wrong for everybody involved. Mario Cristobal is now being laughed at, and he's only, what, four games into his, you know, college career at Miami, his dream job. But, you know, losing to MTSU, everybody's going to laugh at you. You know, Van Dyke has fallen four or five rounds in the NFL draft, at least, just from two performances, especially this one. And this team, you know, heading into Texas A&M, you wondered if they could win 10. Heading into North Carolina, you know, luckily for them, they have a bye week. But heading into North Carolina the week after this weekend, you wonder if this team is 6-6. Because now this brings North Carolina as a loss into play. It brings everybody, including Georgia Tech, which I doubt would happen, but brings Georgia Tech into play. Because if you lose to Middle Tennessee this way and never ever show a fight, and always, honest to God, when it was 31-17 and they gave up that 98-yard touchdown pass, I was astounded. That's when I tweeted, like, I don't even know what's happening here. Like, this was supposed to be a game. Maybe if they let it get away and they're down 31-17, maybe they come back and scrap together a 34-31 embarrassing win. But no, you get drubbed. And there's really no coming back from that this season. I think this team is in a lot of trouble.
Chase Cunningham, quarterback for Middle Tennessee, had touchdown passes of 71, 69, and 98 yards. Mike, it isn't like they were dinking and dunking. I mean, they went all over the place. And then Miami returns the kickoff for a touchdown after that 98 yarder. And you think, okay, is this the spark that you need? Is this going to be the thing? Nope. Middle Tennessee, 12 play drive, 75 yards, goes down, scores again, 45-24. And at that point, the white flags were all over the place.
Kind of toying, doing whatever they want.
Yeah.
You know, yep. Listen, Rick Stockstill is a great coach. He's been around for a very, very long time. He took that Middle Tennessee job 100 years ago. He was a big-time recruiter and a hot assistant coach, and he never moved and never wavered, which is smart. He's not a dummy, and he out-coached Cristobal, and his team was more prepared. And listen, Mario Cristobal is a great recruiter. He was fun to watch at Alabama as a recruiter. He was fun to watch at Oregon as a recruiter. He won two Pac-12 titles, you know, one of them sort of by default, but there's always been questions about his coaching ability. And that's going to continue, especially if they lose games like this. You know, hiring Kevin Steele, who's been at 58 programs over the last, you know, 10 years, and hiring Josh Gattis, you know, who was disgruntled at Michigan, obviously, these things aren't working out, and it's early. Now, again, we're in an overreaction type of world. So this is the world that I live in. Okay, so Florida was the best team ever after they beat Utah, and Anthony Richardson was the number one overall pick. Okay, that's fallen off in 3 weeks badly. Florida State is 4-0, and they're the best team in the history of college football. So we'll see what happens there. Miami loses to Middle Tennessee, and Cristobal's a failure, and Miami sucks forever. None of these are true. Florida is not a horrible football team. Florida State is not the best football team in the world, and Mario Cristobal is. It doesn't mean he's not a good fit there. But things need to be changed. Because every time they had an opportunity to get momentum, it was thrown away. And Chase Cunningham, to your point, he threw for 408 yards against a bunch of four-star defensive backs. And he just made it look easy.
Around the top 10, Mike, a lot of games, one-score games. Usually the higher team obviously won the game, Mike. But I'm curious of these four, which one was more surprising? Which one had you a little bit more confused? Michigan 34, Maryland 27, USC 17, Oregon State 14, Kentucky 31, Northern Illinois 23, or the Fighting Jimbo Fishers 23, your favorite team, your favorite coach, Sam Pittman, 21. Mm-hmm. Of those four games, which one was more surprising to you?
The Maryland game was surprising to me. So I'll get to the other ones first. USC going into Oregon State. Oregon State hasn't lost at home in a very, very long time. Well-coached football team, difficult battle on the road, and USC was riding this high. You got all these transfers. You know, Caleb Williams came down to earth a little bit, was bailed out by the defense, and die on offense at running the football. You know, but 16 or 36, 180 yards, not a good game for Caleb Williams. But you knew this was going to happen, you know, whether it was Oregon State or somebody else. That was expected. Kentucky doesn't blow anybody out. I don't care who you are. I mean, yeah, they beat Florida pretty soundly, but that's still like, what, two scores. They don't blow anybody out. They beat Miami of Ohio 37-13, whoop-de-doo. They beat Youngstown State 31-0, whoop-de-doo. I don't expect them to blow anybody out, and the fact that they struggle with Northern Illinois doesn't stun me. And it doesn't stun me that Texas A&M beat Arkansas. You know, it's a neutral site game. Texas A&M has a ton of talent. I think Arkansas sort of blew this one. So, you know, the legendary coach of Sam Pittman, he didn't have a great game. And I don't think he coached this one very well down the stretch. To me, though, you know, Michigan played nobody, you know, three cadaver football teams. But Maryland impressed me. So Oregon State I knew was okay. Northern Illinois, I don't really care. Arkansas, 50-50 whether they lose or not. But Maryland impressed me. And I think this is more about Maryland impressing me. They gave away a touchdown on the first freaking play of the game, obviously, with the kick return. Yep. They hung in here. Loxley's done a really good job, and they got killed in the portal. I mean, killed. And the fact that they're still able to put together a roster that could give Michigan trouble, and Michigan really had to lean on their running game and that power game of theirs, that surprised me. So Michigan's not as good as I thought. And Maryland's better than I thought, and that game kind of surprised me.
Well, if we're going to talk Michigan, let's talk Ohio State for a second. They obviously have Wisconsin at home, the blackout, and that one was over pretty early, Mike. You know, obviously Ohio State gives up two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, not as close as the score would indicate, 52-21. Ohio State all over Wisconsin.
And this is what's funny about Ohio State is they're just so dangerous when they're on. That C.J. Stroud doesn't even have to be a good quarterback. I mean, he was 17-27, 281 yards, five TDs, and a pick. It's not outstanding, but he gets bailed out by his offensive talent. It's amazing. You know, whether it's Cade Stover making a great catch, you know, whether it's Fleming or whether it's Igbuka or whether it's Harrison. I mean, Smith and Jigba didn't even play. He still locks on. He still goes to his first read more often than not, and you just can't stop it. Doesn't matter. You know, if Fleming's his first read on a slant and he's covered, he'll still throw it, and Fleming will figure out a way to catch it and make a play. Then you get the two-headed monster at running back of Henderson and Williams. You can't stop them either. When this offense is rolling, I don't care who you are, and Wisconsin's a pretty good defensive football team, you have no chance. Unless you're Georgia. Unless you're Alabama, unless you have better athletes on defense. So this is the Ohio State I expected to see against Notre Dame. This is the score I expected to see against Notre Dame. It just took them four games to sort of, you know, ease their way into this offense. And when Smith and Jigba's back, I don't think there's a way to really stop Stroud from winning the Heisman this year. I don't see anybody beating them in the regular season. That doesn't mean they're going to win the national title. I still had in the beginning of the season, and I could change this, and you know, thinking about it, it's either going to be Georgia or Alabama against Ohio State in the national championship game. And I don't know if Ohio State will win that, but I know they're going to be there. That's how good they are.
Can we talk about the game of the day? Well, these are great games, by the way, Mike. These are all fantastic. Can we talk about the game of the day? The game nobody wanted to win.
Which game is that?
Auburn over Missouri, 17-14. Nobody wanted to win that one. Brian Harsin tried to give it away. Missouri can't get a field goal, fumble through the end zone. What are we doing there, Mike? What was going on?
The game out of my head is honestly the second half of that football game. And I went back. So what I do is I watch as many games as possible on Saturday. Then Saturday night, you know, I'll tape the late game and I'll rewatch. And then when Sunday and Monday comes around, especially networks like the Big Ten Network, which give you those really summarized looks at the game. It's play after play after play, no commercial, all that stuff. I'll watch them again. The last probably more than 30 minutes, you know, into overtime. I don't know how long, you know, whatever you count. The last 35 minutes of that football game were just the worst 35 minutes of football you're ever going to see, ever.
But you couldn't turn away, right? You couldn't stop watching.
But it was disgusting. I mean, honestly, I'd rather Harsin get fired after this than losing to LSU or losing to Georgia or losing to Ole Miss or losing to Arkansas. Whatever game coming up that he's going to lose, that he's going to get fired after. I'd rather this be the fireable offense, because you won in such a disgustingly horrible way that you don't deserve to stay there, and they don't want you there. And listen, I don't think he should be fired in his second year. I mean, what are we coming to? But they didn't want him in the first place. They tried to get rid of him. If you're going to fire him after this game. And Eli Drinkwitz, I just need to know how Luther Burden is the best athlete you have on offense. He's a true freshman. How's he get 3 targets, no yards? If I'm Luther Burden, you know, and he seems to be a very quiet kid, and he's not like a Kayshon Boutte who's going to, you know, strip all, you know, mentions of his team. I would look at the portal. Now, again, you can't go in the portal unless your coach is fired. Then you get a 30-day window during, you know, the season or December. But if I'm Luther Burden, I'm looking at that portal. There's no way on earth I should be targeted 3 times. There's no way on earth that I should have 0 yards. And there's no way on earth that I shouldn't get a minimum 8 to 10 touches a game, whether it's, you know, jet sweeps, direct snaps, whatever. So really just 2 horrible coaching jobs. And I think, you know, we know Harsin's a dead man walking, but I think this game itself has the Missouri fan base really, really, really itching for a change.
We'll get to coaches in just 1 second. Is there any other game, Mike, this weekend that caught your eye, that surprised you, maybe a below-the-radar game that you were really interested in?
I mean, Iowa, their defense has outscored their offense, right, I think, this season. No, the Oregon-Washington State game, to me, was intriguing. You know, because Washington State's a pretty good football team. They got off to a good start. Oregon was down in this game pretty much all the way until the fourth quarter. And then, you know, we had another Bo Nix show. And that just intrigues me because, you know, he's always had talent, always. He was a 5-star at high school for a reason. But it's starting to come together. They're 3-1. He's starting to put, you know, everything together where he doesn't have to do too much and play within himself, like Hooker that I talked about. He's cutting down on the mistakes. He's a threat to run the ball. You know, Oregon suddenly to me looks like the best team in the Pac-12, which there's no way we could ever say that after the loss to Georgia. But Georgia looks so good and so strong. And I know they didn't play well this past weekend, but that doesn't count. You know, USC, there's some holes there. Still got issues in the trenches. UCLA quietly 4-0, but you know they'll blow 1 or 2 games that they should win. You know, Washington, they're not ready yet. They're 4-0 as well. Utah disappointed me against Florida. I think this Oregon team is going to be really dangerous if Bo Nix can continue to play with this confidence. Because if you give this kid confidence, at Auburn he was running for his life, and he was given the job because of his last name over Malik Willis. And there were a lot of people internally when he started to struggle that felt that was a mistake. And he had no offensive line to deal with whatsoever. Now he could get his footing at Oregon. They've got some weapons. He could really make a lot of noise.
Yeah, and I thought he might go into the tank. He had a horrible pick 6, right? Pushed Washington State up 17-6. I thought that may be, you know, the folding up. But to your point, I give him credit, Mike. He came back and played a pretty good football game after that. Obviously, the defense with a pick 6 to help steal the thing at the end there. But I think old Bo Nix throws that pick 6, goes to the sideline, pouts a little bit, and gets in his head. This version of Bo Nix came back and played.
And I credit Kenny Dillingham, and I credit Dan Lanning of sticking with him. I mean, because there's a lot of pressure out there to yank this guy, especially after the loss to Georgia. And there's Bo Nix jokes out there, similar to what we saw, Kellen Mond jokes and Spencer Rattler jokes, of guys who just never sort of lived up to their expectations. The Bo Nix jokes are out there. These guys believe in him. They believe in what they're doing. And I think that was, you know, crucial for them to show that confidence in him and say, listen, we know you got drubbed by Georgia. You know, we know you struggled here and there, but we believe in you. And he paid that belief off against BYU and Washington State this past weekend. They got Stanford and Arizona, which are two layups. And then UCLA, which is like a difficult game. Cal, Colorado. I mean, until they get to Washington and Utah, and then at Oregon State at the end of the season, the schedule's cake. I mean, we could easily be looking at a team with one loss heading into Thanksgiving, or, you know, at least heading into the middle of November.
All right, let's go off the field, Mike. Three straight weeks, and we've had a coach fired after the weekend. This time, Jeff Collins is relieved of his duties from Georgia Tech. He follows Herm Edwards out at Arizona State, and, of course, Scott Frost out in Nebraska. Now that we know more about the openings, Mike, who's starting, do you think, come and play for some of these openings? Let's start with Georgia Tech, obviously, kind of hot off the press. Obviously, a dreadful year of 10-28 lifetime for Jeff Collins. You know, blown out against Ole Miss. Probably could have beaten UCF this weekend, but they just couldn't get out of their own way. And Jeff Collins goes away. Who do you think is going to take over at Georgia Tech? Who's your short list? Who's your favorite? What are your front runners for the head coach job there?
You know, it's a very attractive job because of Atlanta and NIL. So Jamie Chadwell would be my first choice, Coastal Carolina. You know, done a great job there. Took over, if you remember, you know, really during a tough situation. And just earned that job because he was an interim. And now he's become, you know, a guy who's consistently winning at the Group of Five level, knows how to recruit, would be a perfect fit in that region. Tyson Helton, Western Kentucky coach, is mentioned if you're looking for an offensive guy, especially after following Collins, who is a defensive guy. You're going to hear Bill O'Brien. You know, Jeff Traylor, UTSA, I mentioned him for Arizona State. He's going to be mentioned also, you know, for this. But I'm not sure if he's, you know, really going to take a job like Georgia Tech or Arizona State. You know, those are the kind of ones that stand out to me. If I'm Georgia Tech, I go and get a Group of Five guy who can recruit. I go and get Chadwell, and I try to see if NIL can make a difference because of this, the city of Atlanta.
What about Todd Monken, Georgia OC?
Yeah, I think that I don't know if Monken is going to be a hot name, you know, because obviously Georgia, if they lose a football game this season, it's going to be, you know, maybe to Alabama in the SEC championship. I mean, they could get upset, but they're not going to lose more than two football games this entire season. The offense just rolling. He's going to be in bigger play for bigger jobs, I think, down the stretch. If I were him, I would never touch this job, you know, because not only do you have to recruit against Kirby in the state of Georgia, which is an impossible task, you also get drilled by him at the end of every season. I wouldn't see that as an attractive job for him.
What about Arizona State? Have you any insight on how their search is coming together?
No insight. I mean, my guy is Traylor. I think it's a great fit because they want to recruit the state of Texas. You know, you would think California would be more important, but everything I hear is that they want a guy who can get into Texas, you know, and also obviously recruit California. But Traylor is, you know, he's a big name, you know, Group of Five guy, continues to be hot in those circles. A lot of people think that he's not going to take a job unless it's a step up in the state of Texas. I don't believe that to be true at all. And I think Arizona State would be very smart to grab him. But nah, it's so early there, you know, and it's obviously early at Georgia Tech that there haven't been really any front runners that have come to mind. You know, it's funny because Norvell comes from there and he went to Memphis and now he's at Florida State. And there was some talk of a couple retread potential hires. You know, Harsin is a guy who's been mentioned with Arizona State and he's not even out of a job yet. And Norvell was another one if he got off to a real struggle this season. So they could end up taking a coach that didn't succeed where he's at, who could be a good coach and a better fit there.
A lot of fans on social media were drubbing the Baylor-Iowa State game as the Nebraska head coach bowl with Dave Aranda and Matt Campbell. Your head is shaking vehemently there. What do you hear about Nebraska?
I think they're going to go for those guys, obviously. I think they're going to go for Fickell. I think they're going to go for, you know, Aranda. He's got Big Ten ties and, you know, obviously a tremendous coach. Matt Campbell, but others have come for Matt Campbell. Bigger names have come for Matt Campbell and they failed. Bigger names have come for Fickell and they failed. You know, Aranda is the wild card a little bit. You know, I think LSU was obviously extremely interested in him. I just don't see him leaving you know, the fertile state of Texas and a good situation at Baylor to go there. Now, a former Baylor coach, Matt Rhule, could certainly be in play, you know, if he doesn't last the season at Carolina. I think Lance Leopold would be the hire. And some Nebraska fans have sort of shot back and say, no, we need guys who could recruit. No, no, you don't need guys who could recruit because you're going to get a 4 or 5 star here and there. You know, your class is going to be made up majority of threes. And in this day and age, I've probably already made this rant. Everybody's a three. Try to find a 2-star in somebody's recruiting class now. Try. I dare you. It just doesn't exist because the ranking systems have all become just like society, where it's just, you know, inclusion and trying to people please everybody to death. So, you know, when I say 3 stars, it's really not. It's not all 3 stars. I mean, there's going to be some 2-star kids that go to Nebraska. It's just life. You need someone who could coach them up, and that's what Leopold can do. I don't think he's in any hurry to leave Kansas. I think they're going to throw everything they can at him as far as guaranteed money to keep him. But they need a coach like that, somebody who can, you know, coach them up. And Matt Rhule can certainly do that. He saved the Baylor program, and Leopold has done it everywhere he's gone.
All right, well, go to your crystal ball. Do we make it 4 weeks in a row? Is there a coach fired after this week, Mike? Absolutely. All right, who's losing their job?
Well, first of all, this should kind of be like, you know, this is like Survivor now. I mean, it should be a kind of a rule, right? It should be a rule in college football that one team has to fire somebody every week because this is fun. I mean, it sucks for the coaches, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, to have a coach fired after week 1, after week 2, after week 2, I mean, just crazy. And it wasn't week 1. I know it's week 2, week 3, week 4. I have to assume either Harsin, you know, or I mean, they're playing LSU. Probably not going to win that game. So he'll be gone. Or Carl Durrell at Colorado, which a lot of people say that Colorado's not going to make a change this year, blah, 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 blah. Well, they're 0-4. They're tremendously awful. They're playing Arizona, who isn't a good football team either. You know, if they lose in the fashion they've lost to, I mean, they lost to TCU 38-13, Air Force 41-10, Minnesota 49-7, UCLA 45-17. They lose to Arizona 45-10. That move has to be made. Just has to. Plus, they're heading into a bye week, which is the perfect time to do it. So, yes, somebody is going to be fired absolutely after this week. I can 100% guarantee that. It's just which one of those two guys.
That's your top two?
Yeah, who am I missing?
Can I interest you in Jeff Scott?
Yeah, you know, it's an
interesting 41-3 at Louisville.
I mean, after the Florida game, they got absolutely croaked. There's absolutely no reason for them to get croaked 41-3 to a Louisville team that's trying to make Malik Cunningham a pocket passer. And they finally, after what, 4 games, said, you know what, maybe that's not a good idea. Let's let Malik run. And he runs for 113 yards and 3 touchdowns. Like, where is the brain trust anywhere that says that he should be a pocket passer? But, yeah, no, I get that. 1-3. Who are they playing this week? That's the big question. I mean, East Carolina.
ECU, just lost to Navy, by the way.
And they, which is amazing because Navy sucks. And Navy's coach was on the hot seat too. So, yeah, I mean, they could get dropped there. Not on my radar. Yeah. I think more Durrell and certainly more Harsin are on my radar as far as, you know, potential firings this week.
All right, a good week in college football, Mike. Some really good close games, but I imagine something has you pissed off this week. What is pissed off, Mike, now?
You know what? I went to a concert last night, and this isn't the pissed off portion. I went to the first rock concert I've gone to probably in 15 years. Saw a band called Bring Me the Horizon. Not sure if you ever heard of them. They're from England. And they were up at this carnival that occurs in Springfield, Massachusetts every year called the Big E. And it's really just usually a nightmare. And they never get good bands. And somebody convinced this amazing band from England to show up. And they were awesome. They were really awesome. Great. The only thing that pissed me off, 1 minute left into the last song, somebody was crowd surfing, and the crowd forgot to surf her. Mm. And she fell, and she cracked her head open, and they had to stop the show and ambulance her out and then end it. I'm pissed off at the people who... Mm. Crowd surfing, you don't just, it's not a trust fall. It's what you do. at concerts like this. So for them to let her fall, it had nothing to do with me personally, as far as, you know, not getting to see the last minute of the last song of the show or anything like that. But I mean, I just don't understand how that possibly happens. It's similar to the play calling in the Missouri Auburn. You're puzzled by it. Now I assume she's okay. I hope she's okay. If she's not, then this is probably very inappropriate to talk about. It was a scary situation. But I tell you what, that I felt like I was 20 years old again last night. And now, after standing in the same spot for like 2 hours, I feel like I'm 85 years old today.
Are you a crowd surfer, Mike? Ever been crowd surfing?
Imagine. I'm 260, man. They wouldn't be able to hold me up. And I'm not a crowd surfer. I didn't go near any circle pits, mosh pits, any wave of deaths, none of that. I was in the peripheral. I was on the floor, standing room only, and just sort of chilling and enjoying it. But it was an amazing, amazing show. They're, arguably my favorite band. So it was great. The whole experience was excellent.
And you said this is some sort of a carnival?
There's a part of that. Yeah, there's like all the fried dough.
Do you have like I was going to ask you, what's your favorite carnival? What's your go-to? You going fried dough? You going fried Oreos? Where do you go?
No, the Oreos I'd never leave, and I'd just die of diabetic shock. So it's fried dough. Definitely fried dough. We didn't partake in the fried dough last night, though. I wanted to stay like light and fit for the show itself. So okay. I decided to, stay a little bit off the heavy, heavy food. And I didn't do any of the rides. I'm not going on the wheel, the roller coaster of death, or, the thing where they bring you 80 floors up and then drop you. None of that stuff. It was dangerous enough for me to be around people because I was probably the oldest person down on the floor. And that was good enough for me.
Well, we're glad you made it alive. Luckily,
I'm a new man. I feel great.
Yeah. If not, this show would have been really interesting if you had been dead. But luckily, you're not, which means MikeFerrellSports.com will continue to get updated. What's happening there, Mike? Give us a sneak peek. Articles are going up this week.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's just so much. These guys do a great job. It's not just me. We got 5 reasons why it's time to buy the Volunteers, which is a great article by Kyle Golic. We got our Week 4 awards, which we do at the end of every weekend by, Matt Perkins. Top 5 QB duels of the past decade. This was inspired by the DJ Wongalele, Sam Hartman bomb fest. And this will bring you back to Joe Burrow versus Tua, Deshaun Watson versus Lamar Jackson, if you remember that great battle.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Geno Smith, Nick Florence, which a lot of people don't remember. Jared Goff, Connor Halliday. A lot of people don't remember that one either. And then, the coup de grace, Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes, when Mahomes threw for 734 yards and also rushed for 85 yards in that game, by the way, which people forget. He threw for 734 and he ran for 85. I mean, unbelievable. But Baker Mayfield had a pretty good game himself, 545 and 7 touchdowns. So it's cool articles like that, fact or fiction. Should Kansas be ranked? Should Syracuse be ranked? Is Hakeem Williams the biggest FSU commitment since Cam Akers? We got the replacements up for Jeff Collins. We got a great Sunday feature. Does Miami actually matter? Do we need a good Miami in college football? So all those are there for your consumption.
Fantastic. Again, MikeFerrellSports.com is where you can find all that. If you're listening to us, thanks for doing that. Hit subscribe on either your podcast player right now or hit subscribe in the YouTube video. Anytime Mike decides to do one of these, you'll be the first, the second one to know about it. I think I'm first. I think he's second. And then I think you might be third. So yeah, I'm not sure the order there, but if you hit subscribe, you don't have to worry about it. You just get the, show anyway.
It'll
get the
fun.
Show without all the hard work that goes into putting it together, which is it's a break for all of you.
You gotta put it together. You got to put the audio, the video together. You got to put the clips together. I just sit here and talk like an idiot. So it's not hard for me.
And we'll do it again next week, perhaps, if you want to tune in. As always, a good week of college football ahead, Mike. I look forward to hearing you and Thor this weekend, breaking down the games.
Yes.
How are you doing in the season? What's our record?
I don't have it. Weird, right? Because you should have it. But I think I'm 29-25. That's my guess. I haven't really dug into it that deeply, but I'm doing well. I mean, for me, that's really good. I'm 33 and 30. That's my I just looked at it right now. I'm 33 and 30.
Okay. I was 18, about 500. Last. Okay.
Yeah, I'm doing better than Thor. That's all that matters. I mean, I'm teaching the young buck a little bit about gambling. And, you know, there's some props that we talk about, too, that are just, you know, Michael Mayer was over under 49 yards or something against UNC. I'm like, why don't you just give me money? There's no point. Do I really have to place a bet on this? Like, of course he's going to. And he got over that in the first half. UNC's defense is horrible. There's props in here where you can make money because we dig into those pretty deeply. And then there's props that go wrong. Sam Hartman, under 297 yards passing. That didn't come in as well as I hoped. So, but the gambling show, it's fun. It's bettingpros.com, at bettingpros on Twitter, bettingpros on YouTube. I don't know what else I'm doing. I think that's it.
Well, that's all for this one, too. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Again, make sure you're subscribing and be nice to each other. Be nice to Mike. You see him out at a conference and make sure you catch him if he crowd surfs. That's a
yeah. And prayers
if he does, get a
picture. Girl got hurt. I mean, hopefully all is okay. Well. I don't joke about. I should joke about. I mean, it was just very scary. But you know, I try to find things that I'm upset about. Sometimes I become very inappropriate.
Thoughts and prayers to all of you. Best of luck.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.